Hello there. Get ready to smile again with Radio's home folks, Vic and Faye. Vic and Faye, written by Paul Reimer, is brought to you each weekday by the makers of the new Sure Mix Crisco. You know, I think if you asked any man what he likes best for dessert, his answer would be pie. It doesn't make much difference what kind of pie it is, just so long as the pie crust is so flaky and tender, it breaks at the touch of a fork. And that's the kind of pie pure all-vegetable Crisco is famous for the country over. Yes, for years, good cooks have turned to Crisco for the answer to flaky, tender pie. But now, the Crisco people have made it possible for everybody to turn out pies like this. They've developed a sensational new pastry method for their shortening that's so surefire, even beginners can turn out flaky, tender pie. And friends, you can get this new surefire pastry method in your December copy of the Good Housekeeping magazine. Just look for the Crisco ad. When you do, notice it tells you to be sure and use only Crisco with this surefire pastry method. You see, Crisco and Crisco surefire method do away with the two chief causes for pie failure: too much water and too much handling of your pie dough. Most cookbooks haven't told you the exact amount of water to use, but Crisco's new pastry method does. That's right, there's no guesswork anymore. Because this new surefire method tells you the exact amount of water to use. Why, you get a pie dough that rolls out like a chart, and boy, what wonderful pie crust. So why not be sure your pie crust will turn out flaky and tender? Ask for pure, all-vegetable Crisco at your store today. Then follow Crisco's new surefire pastry method. Remember, to get this new surefire pastry method, you don't have to buy anything, you don't have to go anywhere. All you have to do is look in your December issue of the McCall's Magazine, Ladies' Home Journal, Woman's Home Companion, or Good Housekeeping. You will find complete directions for Crisco's new surefire pastry method in the Crisco ad. Well, sir, the evening meal has been over only a little while, as our scene opens now. And here in the living room of the small house, halfway up in the next block, we find all our friends assembled. Mr. and Mrs. Victor Cook are seated side by side in the Davenport with sections of the newspaper, but they aren't reading at the moment, being requested by their small son to listen to a thrilling passage from our third lieutenant, Mrs. Stanley's story.
The handsome young officer regarded the band of counterfeiting, coffee-ground fortune-tellers with the utmost contempt. "You are nothing but a band of counterfeiting, coffee-ground fortune-tellers," he taunted, and he threw a protecting arm around Lady Margaret. The beautiful woman coquettishly extricated herself from his affectionate grasp and trotted off a few paces. "I love you," sang out Sir Lieutenant Stanley. "I love you too," caroled his sweetheart, and even the heart of the scoundrelly band of counterfeiters.
I don't believe I want to hear anymore.
Me neither.
Okay.
Lieutenant Stanley's a halfling.
So is Lady Margaret.
Okay.
We got anything on the docket particularly tomorrow evening?
Tomorrow evening? Not that I know of. Why? What's this now?
It's a very even wedding.
Somebody's coming here?
Well, maybe if it's okay with you.
Who's coming?
Perhaps somebody nice. Perhaps someone you like.
Uh-huh. I can tell by the way you're acting, someone I like.
What's the discussion, people? I'm all through with my book.
Oh, Sir Lieutenant put the kibosh on the counterfeit, did he?
Seems to it that every last one of them got their just desserts.
I see even cake up them.
Beg your pardon?
You said the counterfeit has got their just desserts. I hope the desserts were ice cream and cake.
Oh, I know it's not much of a deal. What's the discussion?
Yes, what is it? Who's fishing us tomorrow night? Robert Keane from Hoopston, Illinois?
Nope.
Y.Y. Flourish from Nebraska?
Nope.
Well, who is somebody like that?
Here's the guess.
Alf Musher?
You get more.
Y.I.I.Y. Stevens?
Who's the third remaining barber at the Butter House Hotel Barbershop?
Stacy Alf, huh? He's coming.
Well, we got nobody else coming, have we? We got no plans for tomorrow night.
What's Stacy Alf coming for?
Dave, do you remember last week Stacy all of a sudden turning from right-handed to left-handed?
No.
Sure you do. It was the afternoon we were going to clean the attic, and I was writing a special magazine article.
All right, I remember. What about it?
Dave, during the time that has elapsed since Stacy Yop suddenly turned from right-handed to left-handed, the phenomenon has repeated itself no less than 60 or 70 times.
He went back to right-handed again?
He went back to right-handed and then back to left-handed. And then back to right-handed and back to left-handed. and so on and so forth, and so on and so forth, until it's enough to make a person hit.
Can he change himself into a right-handed fella or a left-handed fella whenever he feels like changing?
No, he can't. The switch from right-handed to left-handed is sudden, involuntary, and unexpected. He may be right-handed fella at breakfast, and then turn into a left-handed fella long about noon.
That's
it. Science tells this kiddo that people are right-handed or left-handed depending on the whereabouts in their skull of their medulla and their oblongata are located.
Can you explain that the other day?
Yeah. Did you understand it?
Sure.
If your medulla is on the right side of your skull and your oblongata on the left side of your skull, you'll be right-handed. The medulla and oblongata, of course, are the parts of your brain.
Whee!
Nothing.
What's the op coming here for?
I'm getting around to that.
Good.
The converse of what I've just described naturally is true. If a person's medulla is situated on the left side of their skull and their oblongata on the right side...
I know all about that.
Are you sure?
What's the op coming here for?
Well... I'll tell you. Dr. Fowler B. Stocker, a distinguished Montana physician, surgeon, lecturer, and brain specialist, arrives in the city tomorrow.
That's so?
Dr. Stocker is to deliver a talk at the Butler House Hotel addressing the members of the Better Businessmen.
Yeah, I read about that in the paper.
Sure. These days, fresh read about it in the paper.
Congratulations, Crash.
Oh, I read stuff in the paper. This particular item...
I'm still curious about good old right-handed Stacy and why he's visiting us tomorrow night.
Can't put two and two together.
No.
Stacy wishes to consult Dr. Stocker.
Oh?
In all probability, Dr. Stocker will have sound theories about Stacy's astounded condition. He may be able to put his finger on the reason for Stacy's being right-handed one minute and left-handed the next.
Then Dr. Stocker is coming too, then?
Yes. We may well be proud to admit him to our home. He's a famous Montana physician, lecturer, surgeon, teacher, brain specialist, and polo player.
The four of us can get up a game of polo.
Five of us. I'll be on deck.
You are witty, right?
Not me. Mine's the witty one.
If Stacy out feels like he ought to see a doctor, why don't he go see a doctor? Why did he drag the doctor here?
Stacy Yopstade is a candidate for membership in the lodge, and I may add, a very good friend.
That's all fine and wonderful. But I still want to ask my question. Why did he drag the doctor here? If I felt like I ought to consult the doctor, I'd go consult the doctor. I wouldn't tell the doctor to meet me at Ruthie Stembottom's house or someplace.
You don't catch on why I've invited Stacy to bring Dr. Stockers here? You might if you thought to
I got a halfway idea, Gov.
A humorous one, no doubt.
No, on the level.
What is your halfway idea?
Well, this Dr. Stockers is traveling around the country and naturally has no office in town. Can't go consult a doctor in his office if he's got no office.
Good, good, good.
That's an unwritten law.
Fine, clear thing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You see, Stacy?
Not particularly. I can see why Stacy don't visit the doctor at his office. The doctor have a no office. But why don't the doctor visit Stacy?
You can puzzle out the answer to that question.
I don't believe I'll bother.
Stacy resides in the Bright Kentucky Hotel.
Well?
Don't you grasp the point?
Uh-oh.
I bet you do, don't you?
No, I don't. Not this trip.
The Bright Kentucky Hotel is no place to consult a doctor.
Why not?
The noise. Freight trains, passenger trains, work trains, switch engines roar past there every minute of the day and night. The furniture rattles. The air is full of smoke. And cinders constantly pound against the window pane and everything else. Dr. Stocker wouldn't be able to hear himself think. Oh, the Bright Kentucky Hotel is no place to consult a physician. Why, if Dr. Stocker's attempted to take Stacy's temperature, the thermometer would shoot right out of his mouth from the vibration.
Huh.
Isn't that true, Harry?
Yeah, I guess it is at that. And Stacy's room is on the railroad track side of the building to boot, isn't it?
Yes.
It's impossible to carry on a conversation in a room that's on the railroad track side of the Bright Kentucky Hotel. Everybody has to yell their head off, and then you can't understand each other.
It would be beneath the dignity of a distinguished man like Dr. Fowler V. Stocker to yell his head off.
Yeah, I guess so.
So now you have the picture in clear perspective, Stacy. In order for Stacy Yop to consult with this famous physician, a meeting place must be provided. As Stacy Yop's good friend and well-wisher, I have offered my home as a meeting place. I'm sure you can have no real objection. Besides doing Stacy a good turn, I also have a scientific interest in the matter. His predicament is baffling and bewildering. I'm anxious to hear Dr. Stocker's diagnosis.
What is it exactly that's ailing Stacy?
One minute he's right-handed, the next minute he's left-handed.
Precisely.
Well, that don't sound so terrible serious to me.
I bet you'd find it upsetting.
Not if I felt all right other ways.
The thing of it is, Dave, if your medulla is located on the right side of your skull and your oblongata is located on the left side of your skull, we may safely assume that you are...
Left-handed.
Right-handed.
All right, right-handed. Don't go into that oblongata trash anymore. What is there in particular about this business that bothers Stacy?
Well, take the date.
Yeah.
Normally right-handed, Stacy found himself at the breakfast table this morning holding his spoon in his left hand.
Did that scare him?
It didn't exactly scare him, but it made him wonder if his medulla had switched places with his oblongata during the night, to where his medulla had somehow worked its way over to the left side.
All right, go on with your story.
As I say, he found himself holding his spoon in his left hand. 2 hours later, while at work in the Butterhouse Hotel barbershop, he was shaving a client and was astounded and agitated to notice that he was holding the razor in his right hand.
Oh.
He'd gone back to right-handed in the short space of 2 hours.
Oh, hey, Gov, I bet he's just like Vernon Pagels.
It must be.
In baseball, Vernon bats either left-handed or right-handed, just as he decides. Also, he can throw right-handed or left-handed.
Scientific term for that, Rush, is ambidextrous. Chump, Vernon Pagels, is ambidextrous.
Your chum, Stacy Yop, is ambidextrous.
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. Shall I tell you why?
Okay.
During moments when Stacy Yop is right-handed, his spoon or his fork or his razor or whatever he's holding feels awkward and unwieldy in his left hand. During moments when he's left-handed, articles in his right hand feel awkward and unwieldy.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Uh-huh.
And here is the clincher.
Mm-hmm.
This morning, at breakfast, Stacy found himself holding his spoon in his left hand. At dinner this noon, he found himself holding his spoon in his right hand.
And at supper, tonight.
Yes, he found himself holding his spoon.
Yes, in either hand. He had two spoons?
He had two spoons.
He was eating with both hands?
He was eating with both hands.
My goodness.
Stacy Yop was left-handed and right-handed all at the same time.
Gee whiz.
Yes, gee whiz. Do you wonder he wishes to consult Dr. Fowler D.
Oh, goodness sake.
What is it, Dave?
Nothing.
Well, neighbors, so ends today's visit at the small house halfway up the next block. But seems like something's always going on at the residence of Mr. and Mrs. Pictures. I'll be waiting there to open the door for you when you drop in on Bacon Day the next time. This is Ed Hurley speaking.
Nine out of ten leading stocking makers say, use Ivory Flakes, you Ivory Flakes, you'll help stockings wear that way. Yes, nightly Ivory Flakes care does help stockings wear longer. And that's an important thing to remember these days, because silk stockings may soon be practically impossible to get.
Why, just listen to the marvelous records of wear that were rolled up when we tested many leading brands of silk stockings with Ivory Flakes. Why, during a test with some lovely Kaiser stockings, we saw records like this. 281 hours of wear, 288, even as much as 344 hours of wear from a single pair of sheer silk stockings. So don't use wrong soap. Use new Ivory Flakes for your stockings every night, too. Just see if you don't get longer wear. Remember, 9 out of 10 leading makers of famous stockings advise new double-quick Ivory Flakes for both their silk and their nylon.
And 9 out of 10 can't be wrong. Oh, 9 out of 10 leading stocking makers say, use Ivory Flakes, you Ivory Flakes, you'll help stockings wear that way. Every night, you Ivory Flakes, and your stockings really wear.